Blog Talk Radio.
And everybody, that's the music. That's the end of the music. Yeah, I forgot what I was doing. That's the end of the music. And this is, once again, a Wednesday evening on the Blog Talk Radio Network. My name is Eric Payne, also known as Citizen Payne, on the Kay Thompson Live Show, and you are?
I am your mother, Kay Thompson Payne. And we are going to have a dynamite show, and we'll just put excuse me. We're having Glenda Taylor on. You know, Glenda, you didn't remember Glenda. She is an author. She is a philosopher. She is a thinker. And she has several books out, and I think I've mentioned them before. One is which the Jellymoso's Drum came from her. She is, can't say enough about her. She has paid so much attention to the youth in the community and to educating them and setting up programs for them. And she is also an author. As I said, she wrote the book, Jellymoso's Drum. We're going to talk to her about that. She also has another book out, Blind Light. And she did Blind Light because somewhere in her years, Glenda couldn't see. She became blind. And she still worked for the City of New York, raising, I think she was a grant writer. She's going to be telling us all that. But she's one of the most exciting women, because of the fact that she is so super intelligent. She makes you feel uncomfortable. She's brilliant. You know, she has several degrees. And even she didn't stop because she became blind, but that was a journey for her. But anyway, that's who we have, and I think you're going to really enjoy this. She's paid special attention to Whoopi Goldberg. Whoopi Goldberg. I think she's one of Whoopi Goldberg is one of the brightest women on television, you know. So, I enjoyed her talking in the morning, but she became famous, and Glenda wrote about her and saw exactly what Whoopi Goldberg was trying to do. So, Eric, that's what we're going to be having on the show, and we're waiting for Wayne Gilman and Byron.
We're not waiting for Byron. Let's open it. Mike, welcome our resident guest, Byron Saunders, to the show. Hey, Byron, how you doing this evening?
Oh, grace and peace, my friends. Congratulations to Newark and getting their school system back online for them to make their own decisions. I think that's quite a accommodation for your mayor and the city and the 20 years that you all had to endure being under state control. So I'm happy for you.
Right. That's one of the stories we're going to talk about, but since you started talking about it, one of the things I was going to pick. I mean, just a little.
I peaked your whole card, Eric.
That's right. One of the things we want to also touch upon that the Newark International Film Festival was this past weekend in Newark, New Jersey, second annual Newark International Film Festival, which turned out to be quite a nice and successful event. A number of international films were submitted to the competition. Number of workshops and discussions were had where young filmmakers could come in and get educated about the process and get mentorship and advice about a lot of their things and a number of films played. And I got to see one film this year. I didn't get to see any last year, so one is better than none. And I'm going to be watching some other ones from the filmmakers that were there. I was a moderator on a panel this year, Women in Film and Television, as well as, again, being a presenter at the award show alongside the likes of the great Melvin Van Peebles, Richard Wesley, author Benilde D. Little, and Kim Hawthorne, one of the stars of the TV show Greenleaf, a Newark native. Also a young brother named Julian Bertano, who's a also has a recurring role on Greenleaf. He's from Newark as well. So it was a great turnout attended by a great number of people. And it was a really good night. The women and Mike, they've got to give them a shout out. That particular workshop recognized and acknowledged my mother in the house as being a pioneer in radio, a woman broadcaster, pioneer in radio. So it was a good weekend. They had a great opening reception night and a great closing night. And we look forward to next year with the Newark International Film Festival, still in its infancy, but doing a lot of great things. Let's take this time out to bring in our other co-host, legendary newsman, Mr. Wayne Gilman. How are you, Mr. Wayne Gilman?
All right. Good evening. How is everyone?
Doing good.
All right.
That's good to hear. Good to hear. You know, I'm grateful to be here. I really feel very, very concerned about the people in Florida and Texas and places like that. And, you know, I mean, we're all suffering from a lot of media hangover as a result of the coverage, but well-intended nonetheless.
And
I'm sorry I missed that film. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We're agreeing with you, Wayne, that you touched upon that. I forgot to touch upon that, that our hearts go out to the people experiencing that difficulty with the storms in the United States and in the Caribbean and various places there. But you were going to say about the film festival. Yes, you did miss it.
Yeah, I'm sorry I did. I know it comes up around this time of the year, and I wish I had gotten a head start, but, you know, things have been crazy with me of late. But next year, I hope to be there.
Well, you know, as you guys know, and you guys attended, they're going to continue doing discussions and interviews throughout the year, like you guys came to with myself and Richard Wesley. They're going to try to do more of those. So maybe, and this is just off the top of the head as I'm sitting here thinking about it, but maybe we can get you guys involved as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to
be
involved as a moderator or whatever. Byron, I know you have quite a background in theater and Babso certainly coming from a theater thespian perspective.
I'm the best you've ever seen, Eric.
What'd you say?
I'm the best actor you've never seen.
aren't we all?
Yes.
Hello.
Hey, Wayne, how are you doing?
I guess all right. I'm not a thespian at all. I mean, some people have called me other kinds of, you know, stuff, but I have a really, really great respect for those who could go on, you know, like your son and Byron and others that I've known too, who just go into character and can act. You know, it's just an amazing thing. And
listen, we'll have to get you over here and get to these classes too. You know,
yeah, I'll probably need several classes before I start.
No comment. But anyway, it's good to hear from you guys.
I act in other areas.
No comment.
Okay.
Listen, you remember Glenda Taylor, right, Wayne?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. She's coming on tonight. You know, Glenda is absolutely brilliant. You know, she has a number of books out. You've heard me discuss and refer to Jalamuso's Drum. Fascinating book. I can never get enough of it because she deals with the power and the lives of Black female actors and actresses. And their contributions to, you know, the whole entertainment field and to education and to Black culture. And she centers on, really, Whoopi Goldberg. And I've often said that if not for Whoopi Goldberg, I would not be watching a certain show in the morning. But anyway, Whoopi is brilliant. Okay.
Before we get to Glenda, I just wanted to touch upon some of these other things. Byron, you brought it. You brought up the news story of the day. The news story of the day. You brought it up about the Newark gaining control of the school system in Medford, Jersey. That's a great thing. As you know, it's been about 23 years.
Yeah.
People don't know it's been about 23 years since Newark lost control of their school system and the state took over the school system. And the city has been trying to get it back ever since. Obviously, the state at the time thought they could do a better job than the individuals running the school system in Newark at the time. Some people,
didn't.
Some people agreed that they did or thought that they did. But it's high time. I know that Mayor Baraka is a strong proponent of local control, as do many other communities and municipalities have control of their own school system. And also, I heard a reporter say that he asked, the Channel 4 report, news report, saying he asked Mayor Baraka, you know, once it goes back into the local hands, there's two options that the voters have to vote upon, which is the mayor appointing the school board or it being done through election. And that's something that the voters have to vote on. This particular reporter said that he is that Mayor Baraka is in favor of having an elected school board. So that's, and of course he is, because, you know, he's a real Democrat and a progressive, and that's the most fair way to do it, to have an elected school board. Wanted to say
also, you know, he was a teacher, and he was also a principal of one of the high schools, and he was a darn good one. He put in programs that, you know, that were so so strong, you know, in dealing with the community. And Mary is probably looking down saying, yes, that's my son.
Right.
You know, so rats for Baraka.
One of the challenges I think that that Newark and other school districts really must be confront now is this charter school issue, because it's you know, you and I, Kay, we and Wayne, we grew up in times when we were dealing with the segregated school systems, and then when they made the changes to deal with, you know, the separating them by intellectual, you know, notions. And it's been, and of course now with the charter school system, it looks like it's, some of it is a resegregating based on class. And of course with Betsy DeVos as education secretary, it will impact on, especially for federal funds, all of our school systems, and Newark is going to have a huge challenge on its hands based on accommodating federal guidelines, charter school issues, community development, and an elected school board is indeed one of the ways to engage the communities. But once again, the ever-changing dynamics of government assistance to help give standard policies to our educational systems across the country. That's a big challenge for you guys.
Yeah.
Well,
also,
if I might, Byron, as someone who briefly left broadcasting to go into the Lion's Den of teaching, and especially, well, I'll operate from the prism or make my description predicated on my experiences in South Bronx. You know, charter schools, I'm not a big advocate of, even though I was involved with one, but I also feel to a certain extent that something has to be done. I know Ross Baraka did a lot to turn around the institutions in Jersey, in Newark there. But
yeah.
And things are slowly progressing here in New York. But one of the biggest problems with getting students to go to the public school system has been, you know, it's not even racial anymore. It's just the socioeconomic, which I guess has largely been the issue, you know, even in the past when you stop and think about it. You know, if you had the means to send your son or daughter to a school that may not be in the same district that you're living in, people got away with that because maybe they knew someone or they had money or something to that effect. But, you know, the public school system has to, and particularly here in New York, there's got to be some major changes to bring back a modicum amount of discipline with the students and a better curriculum.
Wayne, what do you think about de Blasio?
Well, he won the primary. I think his heart is in the right direction. I can't say. There have been times when I've been a little bit disappointed about some things, but he's really been faced with a lot of major difficulties stemming from the previous administration, and he's had to turn things around. Is he progressive? To a certain extent, I think he is. You know, I see him, you know, getting in another term. I don't see anyone at this point offering a realistic challenge. But, you know, New York is always under, you know, a microscopic eye. It's in the fishbowl. There's always something going on that just needs to be corrected. And one or two terms with somebody's progressive philosophy is very often not enough, you know? And I'm not saying that there shouldn't be term limits. Go ahead.
Well, what do you think about de Blasio?
That was what I was saying about de Blasio. You know, he's progressive. I mean, he was, you know, he won the primary. Chances are he's going to be reelected. You know, there have been good things that I would say, you know, he got rid of stop and frisk. You know, he's sensitive on certain issues. You know, but no one mayor there has been perfect. And every mayor has had their hidden agenda. I mean, Bloomberg, he did a lot to promote the city as a beacon of financial hope. I mean, people who wanted to come there and make millions. You know, he's done a lot to basically gentrify the five boroughs more than ever before. I think it started off slowly with Giuliani, and Bloomberg took it for a touchdown. But there's still more. I mean, once he was able to get out and finished up his third term, and de Blasio came in, he had a lot to reconstruct in the interest of those progressive elements that want a fair shake in this town. And it's not just even de Blasio, it's just years of neglect. Let's look at transportation, you know.
Years of neglect.
Byron could have, you know, will testify to what I'm saying.
I just wanted to make a little comparison, since we're talking about education initially. Well, the New York City Board of Mayor and the New York City government has control. How does that work in the city in terms of their control of their school system? They are able to control, have local control of the school system, or?
No, the mayor. It's under the mayor. At one time it was not, but it's under the mayor's governance now. At one point,
right,
it was a big issue about Cuomo stepping in and trying to change things, but they were able to come up with funding and the political support to keep it under the mayor's supervision.
Right, and I think that's more, obviously, people on the ground are a lot more aware of the education needed. I think that was the big thing before we got kind of sidetracked or jumped ahead of ourselves into the politics of New York and de Blasio, since he won the Democratic primary. The educational system in Newark, a lot of people are celebrating that because they've been fighting for the local control system and obviously people on the ground knowing what their children need, especially in an elected school board scenario. I think that, you know, there's going to be a lot of jockeying at first, but I think that we'll be able to get the best representatives, people that have the best interests of the students, in mind. I don't know what you guys' thoughts are on that along those lines, but I think that's a definite must, certainly in a school system that is predominantly black, and to want to make sure that the kids are being educated with a fair and, I hate to say, balanced education in terms of from a historical standpoint at the very least, and also in terms of the particular needs of children that need to be educated where the resources have not been as great as those children that are in communities that are a little bit more financially well off. You said something, Wayne, that I thought was interesting. You said you thought it was more social economic as opposed to racial. I think it's racial through the social economic situation of many of the people that are caught in the inner city or in urban areas where their funding for school systems is, you know, obviously it's based on, I guess, the tax base, the tax revenue, and, you know, you have poorer areas, so they can't afford to have, you know, the facilities usually.
Yeah, and the thing is that, I mean, not to, you know, paint with a broad stroke, but the bottom line is that a lot of these kids are gifted, but, you know, the programs that once existed in the public schools, especially at the time when I was going to school, and I didn't have a public school education. I went to parochial school. You know, my parents wanted me out of the public school system because it was going down then in the 1960s and the 70s, you know. At one time, it used to be the shining star of the entire nation if you went to the a New York City school in the 50s and in the 40s. But somehow there was this wholesale change and programs were leaving. And I one of the things that, you know, got my attention is that the after-school programs that the kids would go to, like for music and art and, you know, something outside of the traditional curriculum that basically holds their attention, those programs need to be brought back, because I think that's the reason why we have so much crime amongst young kids, because the focus is no longer there, you know what I mean? The deal is that there was a time when kids would, you know, the regular curriculum would be over the school schedule of what you would learn to graduate to another class would probably end like 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then there were considered after school programs that were within the same facility offered by the same institutions. And all of a sudden when it was time to cut budgets, those budgets were chopped, particularly music and art, you know.
First one,
I think that led to the decline.
Absolutely. I mean, a perfect example, the person here on our panel or part of the show that probably has the most insight into the school system is Yuma, having worked with people like Marion Bolden and within the school system, the superintendent at one time. I know that when you were working with Marion Bolden and helping her get the message out of what she was trying to do with the school system, the state still had control, but you guys worked within the system as much as you could to maintain some local control, right, and to have some influence on it. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, and the teachers had some say that the teachers' organization, the teachers' association, was really a strong group of people. You know, we really came out and we close changes. You know, so I saw things going up instead of down, you know, especially in the elementary schools, the junior high schools and the high schools also. But it did take a while, you know, because there was a lot of resistance at that particular time, you know, black, white, you know, this kind of stuff. But I was glad to see Rassen, because Rassen is a former principal. You know, he's very well equipped and educated as to run the school district, and he was the head of the high school there, and he was absolutely fantastic.
A lot of people said that at that time, even when Raz, I remember you mentioning it and hearing his reputation of being someone who was a proponent of, you know, a lot of people were proponents of giving control back to the local municipality. And Raz at that time, even as a teacher and a principal, he was a proponent of it. He's one that tried to instill a lot of encouragement in the children and try to, you know, it seems as though in those days you guys were trying to fill a gap that was left by the state, and there was a disconnect from the state with the local board. And Raz, I heard, had the reputation of doing that. You're confirming that now.
Exactly. And also, you know, the state didn't care that much about Newark. Mm-hmm. Let's face it, you know, so, but, you know, we had a get-together, and we had the Teachers Association and, you know, various people. In fact, that was the time when there was a whole lot of, mistrust with the Board of Education not really being serious about the education of black kids at that time. But the Teachers Associations and the African-American sororities, you know, we got together and, tried to change the system. So, and then I created a certain, you know, program for the school system, and I had, you remember, but I had guaranteed to the superintendent I would have the kids reading fully within a 2-month period, and they did.
Right.
And it was like a miracle program, because all the kids, they would go home, watch television. So I came up with the idea of the Electronic Media Development for Learning program. There was this one young program, one young teacher, rather, he was teaching in the fifth grade, come in and he would cry in his class because he could get the kids quiet. And I would be tickled because I said, wow, he's a man and he can't get the kids quiet. But anyway, I told him, I said, I have a method for you that you can use, and I guarantee you'll be able to get the quiet. And he said, what's that? I said, go in the classroom and say, who wants to be on television? I said, that's all you have to do, because television was just coming out, and all the kids were listening. They wanted it. They wanted it in the classroom. Da-da-da-da.
So you were using, this is really interesting. I never really paid much attention to it the first couple of times my mom told me. And after a while, I started paying attention. I realized how brilliant it was. And this was a teaching tool for producing a TV show as a teaching tool to get the kids interested in researching and developing subjects that they should be learning in school. And you pitched to the teachers that to present it to the kids as if they were producing a TV show. And in that way, using that as a teaching tool to encourage and spawn kids' minds to learn about the subjects. It was really quite brilliant at the time. As I said, I didn't pay much attention to it until I really actually listened to you one time after the 150th time and said, wow, Mom, that's pretty deep. So my mom had a good idea then.
You hear me that, Wayne? You hear that, Byron?
You had a good idea then. Okay.
Kay, is he trying to butter you up? Is he trying to butter you up for something? I don't know.
It actually was. In a pretty brilliant way, particularly in a society that is getting TV and visually, even before that, because now we're in the computer, Facebook, social media age, mm-hmm. where people are into that. They're into the images. They're into the visual media.
Right.
And at that time, noticing that everybody likes to be on TV. Anyway, if you look at something as simple as your news broadcast and see how the people trip in the background waving in the camera, it could be a murder that the reporter's covering, and these people are jumping around in the background. So it was really kind of ahead of time to think about it.
I did more laughing during that particular time because the kids actually became the writers, the producers, the guests. Talking about different topics, I'd be laughing at them more so than anything else. But they loved it. They loved coming to school. That was key, because I was ready to leave school. I said, if I can't control kids, I'm out of here. I have other things to do. So, but anyway, that program was successful, and the New Jersey State Department of Education had me going around to six different schools, six different cities in New Jersey to teach the program.
Okay.
And they paid for it. It's also big time.
I want to put a pin in that right now, the school system thing. You asked about de Blasio earlier, but I forgot to mention that he did win the Democratic primary over there in New York, right, Wayne?
Did you guys have
the general election coming up? When is that
coming up in a couple of months in November. And he is facing a Republican young lady who is 36 years of age. She's in the U.S., not the U.S. Senate. She's in the state legislature, either assembly or the state Senate. I've forgotten her position. She's Republican from Staten Island, and, she's using her youthfulness against de Blasio, but this is basically a Democratic town. It would take a great deal. I think the only reason why Bloomberg won as a Republican because he was formerly a Democrat, it's rare that you have, Republican mayors in such a blue state like the state of New York and the city of New York. But it looks at this point that de Blasio is not going to have a hard time getting back into the seat, and that's that. We'll be anxious to see what could happen to trip him up at this point, including the controversy with his position on Christopher Columbus, he has not been so vocal about, expressing his thoughts. He thinks that should be given to a committee to decide. And there have been enough protest demonstrations recently, and I'm reminded of last week's conversation with Byron on the issue of tearing down some of these images, and it's catching on,
It's really
catching on. And if you all ever have a chance to be idle for a minute, I from time to time go into YouTube and I look at old clips of the late great comedian Flip Wilson, and he's got this thing on Christopher Columbus that's hilarious. I mean, really, it's so hilarious and so true to what's going on right now. It's just amazing. So I just want to throw that out there,
Wayne, so. The other candidate that you mentioned, Nicole Maliotakis is from Staten Island, and there is
right.
a independent, Bo Deal, who is a former police detective running as an independent.
Don't even call his name. Go ahead.
I know.
All right.
You know, but you're right about it, this being a Democratic town. De Blasio's, Brooklyn has become a very powerful borough, and
yeah.
very well liked here. And he will carry all, probably every borough, maybe even Staten Island, as much as they like Nicole. But I don't see her being much of a challenge for this upcoming second term.
Yeah. And it's my oversight. I didn't mention anything about Bo because I think he's a joke to begin with. And I said it. If you want to comment on it or somebody want to criticize me, you know, write me at the K Thompson Live program, and I'll be more than welcome to challenge you on his position about stop and frisk, and you know how we should turn the clock back, and you know.
He's the FLP. He's a Fraternal Order of Police candidate.
Bo Deedle. Yeah, he's a frequent contributor on Fox.
We're not even going to talk about him. He's a non-factor.
Exactly. He didn't even get. He couldn't even run for dog catcher.
Yeah, no, forget about him. I wanted to talk about that. You guys actually had a kind of a low Democratic turnout, right? That was really
it was disgusting,
right?
It was very disgusting. It's despicable. The turnout is what is ruining democracy, and we have to address this because on the right, you've got the Republicans who are engaged in voter suppression from their gerrymandering to purging the rolls, and then you have the poor turnouts. What do you expect? Democracy is failing because we're not encouraging people to vote, period.
Well, you know, and I'm glad you brought that up, Eric and Byron. I watched the Steve Bannon interview with Charlie Rose the other night, and I'm just taken back that whole Republican agenda. And to a certain extent, I'm just really concerned about where the Democrats are going for the next presidential election. And you know, I know Hillary has a book out now, and she's blaming everyone else but herself, it looks like. I mean, I'm just saying that. I'm someone who supported her, and I don't see her running again. But, you know, the deal is that the party needs fresh blood. I mean, and I'm not even talking about Bernie Sanders. He did a lot to energize that millennial vote. But, you know, black folks stood home. They stood home in Philly. They stood home in Michigan. They stood home in, you know, to a certain extent in New York, you know. We need somebody like a Mariano Rivera, former Yankee closer, to close the Democratic package. You know,
we've got a number of up and coming people. I mean, I think you know, we've got Kamala Harris is a rising star out of California. Of course, Cory Booker, and people are looking at Al Franken quite seriously. So there are a number of Democrats that are up and coming. Of course, Elizabeth Warren, who is part of that progressive, very left-leaning part of the party, really progressive, and probably leads in that. That might come back to haunt her that she's so progressive. But we've got a number of stars. It's not as bleak as I'm sure you make it out to be. I wanted to talk about de Blasio potentially one day running for president.
It's a possibility. Eric, it's a high possibility, but at the very moment, and a little poll here, but the four of us, did the Russians succeed in hacking our election? Yes or no?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now, getting beyond that, because see, at the point at which it's so easy for us to say yes, and that the election outcome was determined by the hack, that we are, our crisis in the Democratic Party is standing up and acknowledging that as the reality, as opposed to playing this game of playing this game with the Republicans at this moment, this new bromance on Capitol Hill between Trump and the Democrats. I mean, it's all fake news, folks. I mean, and let's get real with this, because we got to get beyond this issue before we can even talk about engaging the Democratic nominee for president or the midterm election.
But Byron, it's coming down the pike. I mean, time flies. And I guess one of the things that I'm looking at, too, and I mean, I agree with you, Eric, that there are a number of stars in the horizon that, you know, and everybody has their own political agenda. But the bottom line is, you know, there was one poll out not long ago, I think about a week ago, saying that if Michelle Obama ran, she would beat everybody
right.
who's out there, you know, seeking that nomination in 2020. So
I think I got to cut it. Yeah, she's one of the potential ones. I just wanted to chime in here on what Byron was saying. I don't think it's a bromance between them. I think Schumer and Pelosi are in the catbird seat where we can get something out of Trump while we're trying to get him out of office.
Right.
We know the news of the weekend kind of overshadowed the most recent Russian news that Flynn, to turn up the heat on Flynn's son and a number of those other things. And we talked about Hillary, touched upon that a little bit in her book coming out. But, you know, she would have won, wasn't for the hack and James Comey releasing that information those 11 days before the election. And her book, you know, I mean, you talked about her book blaming everybody but herself. The blame, she has a certain amount of blame, too. But I'm one that insists upon the fact that the Republicans have been doing a job on Hillary Clinton for the last 30 years since she first tried to help.
No question.
Even local Republicans did a job on her when her husband was governor. Then when they got on the national level, they've been doing a job on her since she tried to get involved in health and the health insurance and the health medical care issue, and try to do something that no other very few first ladies have done before, which is, you know, stop being just a first lady standing by. Then I guess it's also a part of the women's lib, thing going on that people weren't used to having a first lady that was going to be a little bit proactive. But since we're on that subject, let's bring in Glenda Taylor here. She's called. I want to get her opinion on this subject matter, how women stand there. How you doing, Glenda?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Yeah. Okay, yeah, so perhaps you heard what I just said about the whole spiel about Hillary. Did you hear what I was just talking about? And I'm interested in hearing
your
opinion.
Yes, I heard the end part of what you said about Hillary. I can't wait to read her new book. I read her other two books, and I'm very interested to hear her perspective of the last 4 years.
Right, right. And we're talking about, you know, what she, her experiences in the campaign and how she has, you know, come out and really saying it like she feels, talking, you know, saying what's really on her mind and on her heart. And I think that, you know, I'm one of the ones thinking that she would have won the election. She would be president were it not for the Russian hack and the combination of the James Comey coming out doing something unprecedented that no other FBI director
had
done before.
Well, let me ask you this, Eric, and Glenda, Wayne Gilman here. How you doing? I just wanted to ask a quick question. Thank you. Since we've determined that Comey and the Russian hack were big influences on the last presidential mm-hmm. election, what's your take on the Electoral College then? Anyone?
Yeah, I really think at this point, I think we should go with a popular vote because we would.
Yeah, it should be abolished.
You know, but at the same time, even if we go with a popular vote, if the Russians or anyone can hack into the computer system, I think we need to go back to the old-fashioned way of doing it because
exactly.
It's not going to matter if they can get into because if they can hack Sony and major companies like that. Because by state, they were affecting our elections in small ways by throwing people off the ballots and doing all kinds of things. And Hillary won what they said was 3 million extra votes. But with the Electoral College, you don't really have a chance. Because it was very suspicious what happened, I think, in Pennsylvania and how she lost Pennsylvania. I don't believe that it was real.
You're exactly right, Glenda. I've said that. I knew from when they first talked about making electronic voting machines and computerizing
mm-hmm.
them. I saw that a long time ago, that if you know anything
mm-hmm.
about computers, you pay anything about computers, you knew that once that there was going to be a computerized system, That meant that anybody that can get to that system before the internet, right? If you have a computerized system even before the internet that is not connected to the internet, you can still get the right person to come in there, the tech person to come in there and program the computer to do something. They can still release spyware. Before they had the internet, spyware was available. You just had to get to the mainframe and plug it in. Remember all those movies? Those of you people that aren't familiar with that, you know, those movies that they had where the person, James Bond, had to run in there and go to master control and do this and do that? Yeah, that's how they do it. I saw that years ago. And I've been saying that. We need to go back to go on, fix your mark on this paper like they used to do with the old folk back in the day. And
oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the voting machines, but all right. I hear what you're saying.
That's what I'm talking about, Wayne. I'm talking about the voting machines. Exactly, man. I'm saying that anytime
the voting machines in New York were like 60 years old, and they used to complain about the condition of that. You know, to a certain extent, there have been advances made. I like the idea of marking on a separate ballot and just submitting it. But, you know, again, you're absolutely right. I guess there's no foolproof way because everything is getting hacked today. Look at Equifax, you know. And that's
right.
A whole
of
other
course.
Story
I'm
by
talking,
itself, you
I'm
know. I don't care because my credit scores are so poor anyway.
Shit. You and me both.
I don't care.
Right, it doesn't matter. But, you know,
yeah,
there was an interesting article in the newspaper recently, but it came up actually about a year ago. The Russian hack, and this is quite interesting because most of us who have computers have a security system that we've either bought into, like Norton or McAfee.
Mm-hmm,
But there was Kaspersky. Kaspersky was offered to not only our security 17 security agencies, but offered to most Americans as a free security program mm-hmm. for your computer. And come to find out, about a year ago, the 17 agencies that are hired to protect us divested all of their computers from Kaspersky. It's a Russian company. And now that Facebook is being the target of where the Russian hack with misinformation, disinformation, all the lies that they could put out on social media, that was part of the strategy. And it's quite interesting that it's now coming back into the fore, into the news, and we're going to find out even more information relative to it wasn't just the election. There was so much that they engaged.
That's
true. Beyond just the election.
So this enables me to get to our final topic that I have listed on our shows for tonight. When I type in the little graphics, I'm so happy to be able to get to all the topics that I write on this show. But when people go to listen to our show, they can see that what they're reading is actually been discussed in the show. So this leads me to the heat getting turned up. Michael Flynn's son, talking about the Russian hack. This is a perfect segue, right? Because Flynn was involved with them. The son obviously was involved in spreading that fake news, Pizzagate they talked about. But now they want to turn up the heat on Flynn's son, being that he's Flynn's right aide, to try to get Flynn to talk a little bit. And knowing that Flynn was working for the government of Turkey when he should have notified the U.S. How do you guys think that comes into play, too? That's all a part of this big, this collusion and this conspiracy with the Trump Organization and those of his members and also Russia. And Flynn is, you know, he's one of the next to Manafort. These guys are almost, you know, the direct conduits with Trump. And he's being turned up on his own. What do you guys think? Or the correlation?
Well, Donald Trump has a lot of explaining to do because, I mean, the deal is that I think he's already well aware that he's going to have to pack it in. I think there's so much stuff out there now. And I know, Byron, the last few times we've been on, you were discussing it, you know, that they're just trying to get all their ducks in a row. And slowly but surely, that's what's happening. You know, everything is becoming, you know, quite public and it's beginning to unravel. And I tell you, that's one of the reasons why all of a sudden he's seeking currying favor with the Democrats, because he knows what's at stake. I don't think that's going to save him.
No, it won't. He's throwing shade. And so his attorneys are doing the typical let's play confusion on the playground, on the playing field, so that you can distract the real issue. But Mueller's investigative committee is going deep into his financial backings, the family support. He's taking on Pence, Ryan, Mitchell, everyone who got Russian money from the oligarchs in their campaigns is under investigation. And that's deep. This treason is not just in the administration. It's in the entire GOP.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Glenda, let's let you get in here. What are you working on now? We're going to put politics aside for a minute. What is it that you're working on?
Politics. It's a great conversation on politics. Because I think we're in trouble with this Russian thing. Because what you just said about the combination of Equifax and that company that you were saying that was the virus protection, I believe that the Russians are in all of our computers. Because I remember when they were insisting at Best Buy, when you bought your computer, that you get this and it was free. And it just sounded very suspicious. And that was pre-Trump and the Russian days. And I think they're in all of our computers. I think we're all hacked. And I think that Equifax things that just happened, we didn't know who those hackers were. Because that's basically the same information that Trump was trying to get when he put that person and said that they wanted all the information to come from the local governments about each voter. And they have that, plus they have that combination now. And somebody has it, it's for sale. So they're going to really have an opportunity to attack all of us in different ways.
Wow.
Scary.
So, Dr. Glenda Taylor, congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Also,
thank you.
Now continue with the politics because you're right on.
No, I don't want to talk politics. I don't want to talk because it's really too upsetting when you think about it and you think how so much information that's available that can be used against us, and technology is great, but we're very vulnerable.
All right.
Because we know what they did back in the 60s and the 70s, and now it's too many people who have access to so much information that each person, could be victimized.
Exactly. Glenda, when did you get your doctorate?
Well, I did my defense on June 5th. And it's officially, the end of June.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was a long, long, hard journey.
Wow. Well, your background is absolutely fantastic. Yeah, you were raising money for the city of New York, and, you had Olympic Vision over there, Church of the Masters. You had a program going on there with the kids. And which was so successful, and you just blossomed from there. And thanks for hiring
me
to do my part.
Well, you were wonderful. I think about that sometimes, and I wonder how many young people, well, they're not young anymore because that's 20 years ago, but how many of them have their own little reality shows based on what you told them? Because that's what you were teaching them how to do, how to produce their own television programs. And they were in their 20s, and some of them were, much older than that. And I'm sure they're all over the place with their little programs. Because you predicted everything that is happening today as far as technology. You said what was going to happen with television and cable and that expansion. You were saying that in the early 90s.
Yeah, they probably got a lot of YouTube channel people that have got that are veterans of some of those programs there. Let me just say, I wanted to comment, we lost a very great comedian activist recently, Mr. Dick Gregory. He is one of the ones who was a comedian go ahead, Mom, you want to say something?
Yeah, I want to say something about Dick Gregory. Gus Henningberg, my partner, was driving Dick Gregory to, I think, somewhere in the South. This is a story that Gus told me. And Dick was driving the car, and they were going at, a little faster than their normal speed, I guess. Anyway, this New Jersey state trooper stopped him. And then Dick Gregory told the trooper that he was rushing because his wife was about to give birth to a little boy. And that that trooper says, I hope the little nigger dies. That's my Dick Gregg story.
Oh, my goodness. You know, we got so much to overcome.
Yeah.
Wow. Glenda, this is Byron.
Byron to continue doing what we're doing and letting people know where we stand, okay? Glenda?
Yes. Yeah, Glenda, I had a question for you. This is Byron, and your book, Blind Light, and I'm just fascinated by your extraordinary depth of field and consciousness to talk about things that we don't talk about.
Thank you. Oh, my God.
I mean, to think about the question that you asked, does one gain access to the sixth sense? And, you know, we take our senses for granted, and yet when you lose your sight, the thing that's so brilliant about your challenge is, yes, we must, acknowledge the gifts that we've been given. So tell us about that. I mean, that's brilliant. I love it.
Thank you. I wrote that 7 years after it happened, so it was a combination. And you always hear that, you hear it when you can see that, that you gain, ability in other areas, and you really do, because I started realizing, in other words, you start knowing things that you really have no physical evidence for. And with me personally, my dreams became very vibrant and very colorful, and I have a very active dream life. And then you start recognizing things about people that you have no way of knowing. Like sometimes when I was in the store, I would know that an Asian person walked into the room without knowing that it was an Asian. And I'd ask my mother, I said, is that person Asian? And she'd say yes. And you could always you also can feel, because it's not something that you're seeing, you can tell when a person is very intelligent or knowledgeable or educated. When they when their presence comes into a room, you know it.
Mm-hmm. Is that before they might say something?
Yes. I was in when I was working in the antique shop. I could always tell when an educated black person walked in the store. I don't know what that was, and I started paying attention to it. And I say educated, I'm not talking about necessarily a college education, but it could be self-educated, very knowledgeable. It was something that they were carrying energetically that was different from people who just were not as well-read. You just knew.
Well, let me ask you, this is when you were lost your sight, or is this during which time is this? Before?
No, this was after. This was after. I lost my vision. I had it, all of my life. And in 2001, my optical nerves were damaged, and then things changed because I'd lost 95% of my vision. So it's kind of like when you're in a hotel and you're looking through the big mirror when you're in the shower and the room, and everything that I see looks like I'm looking through that cloud. That's what my vision is like now. So you're not seeing things. The only thing you're doing is hearing, basically, and feeling. And then you start, trying to interpret what you're feeling and what you're, and like you said, with your sixth sense. And you realize that this, things that people say that is very real, that we really do have a sixth sense. And it's very active when it does. You don't have to shut down your vision for it to happen, but because it happens, I think, we seek another way of seeing and knowing.
Right. That's fascinating. I feel what you're saying.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just briefly going to make it. There's a temptation, me being the clown, to make a whole bunch of lowbrow jokes when you say you could know when someone not too intelligent or this person comes in the room. But go ahead, Byron.
And sometimes they don't have to say anything, Eric. You can just feel it. And I don't know what that is, and I don't interpret it. And I had to kind of, you know, because at first things happen and then you're experiencing it and you still don't really know if you know what you're talking about or you know what you're feeling, and then you have to wait until a person starts talking or you, you know, if someone else that you know is there, you could, you know, like kind of ask them a question and then, you know, you find out if what you're really experiencing, if it's really true. And you start experiencing people differently. And you realize that we truly are energy fields.
Yes. Okay. Glenda, I was going to ask you, basically, Go ahead, Kay.
Glenda, I need to ask you this. You have a segment in one of your books, Jalapeno Soup Drum, about women. Talk about the powerful women in that segment, in that book.
Well, basically, that book was about African Americans.
What did you feel about Whoopi Goldberg?
Well, Whoopi is a very talented woman. And basically, that book was about different African-American female artists and how they were using their autobiographies and their memoirs to record an aspect of American history that does not get put in history books, in a traditional textbook, a history book. And, you know, Whoopi, Sissy Houston, Etta James, Marian Anderson, when you read Dinah Ross, all of them, when you read their memoirs, you find out a lot of things about American history and African-American history that the average person doesn't know, especially the people who wrote their books and the people, you know, like early 20s, like Ethel Waters, Eartha Kitt, people like that. It's really fascinating. And, you know, that's what that book is about.
Okay. Byron, get in here. And Glenda, I want you to come back at another time to also, you know, expound more on the book, Jalapeno's Drum. I've wanted to get to you to deal with that in depth, and I'm pulling some to do that. You know that. Okay, Byron, pick up on your point.
Sure, no problem. Well, obviously, where does one get the book? So let's go there. Let's make some sales here. Where do you get this book?
Amazon. You can go on the internet to Amazon.com and you can get the book.
Okay. That's right. We want people to increase their library by all means, you know. And the other thing is that something you said, Glenda, that's really, I find, quite extraordinary happening today, because so much of our senses are being dulled by technology.
Yes.
We're not really paying attention to those signs that our body tells us. And I think you shed something very extraordinary about your own personal journey and travels into learning more about your body and your own senses. I think we need to pay attention more, because our body is a beacon to the universe. And we're not at the point now, so much of us are playing these PlayStation games. Virtual reality is not real. It is not a real place.
Yeah. Because basically, I mean, when you think about it, especially people who are over 40 or 50 years old, if you're over 40 or 50 years old and you really learn this technology, I believe that you could conquer the world. Because I'm finding that the young people, they're not using their minds. They know the technology better than older people. But they're using it for silly little things. And they don't use their brains. I mean, you can just ask your iPhone, what is 100 times 50? And it tells them. They're not using their brain to find that out. And when you think about, like, say, for example, Martin Luther King, and what he individually and as a communal whole accomplished, he didn't have the internet, and he didn't have Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And you think about, if we just thought the way he did and we're focused on a very specific goal with the technology that we have today, there's nothing that we can't really accomplish. We can literally conquer in ways that are just unthought of. But young people, they need to kind of, you know, up their game, because they've lost focus because there's so much out there to take their attention.
That's it. That, Glenda, you get the last point. That was a very good point. We've got 30 seconds to the end of the show. Glenda, that was a great point to end the show on. We want to thank you for coming on once again. Glenda Taylor, author of a number of books, Jalamuso's Drum and Blind Light. We're going to have you back again. Glenda, thank you for calling in. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Glenda.
Thank you. Thank you all.
All right. Thank you. Our resident guest, Byron Saunders. Thank you, sir.
Peace and love, always.
Thank you. Our guest host, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Honor and a pleasure, and very fascinating story with Glenda this evening.
All right. Thank you. This has been the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Motor Show's Archive. I'm Eric Payne, and you are?
Kay Thompson on Kay Thompson Live. Join us next Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on?
Thank you. Blog Talk Radio.